Mic check, check, I'm good. So I'm Max Duran. Max Duran, CWB Association Welding Podcast. Today we have a really cool guest, Welding Podcast.
The show is about to begin.
Attention welders in Canada. Looking for top quality welding supplies? Look no further than Canada Welding Supply. With a vast selection of premium equipment, safety gear, and consumables, CWS has got you covered. They offer fast and reliable shipping across the country, and here's the best part. All podcast listeners get 10% off any pair of welding gloves. Can you believe that? Use code CWB10 at checkout when placing your next order. Visit CanadaWeldingSupply.ca now. Canada Welding Supply, your trusted welding supplier. Happy welding.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CWB Association podcast. My name is Max Duran, and as always, I'm checking out all the talents and skills and wonderful people across the planet. Today, I have brought in a good friend of mine and a wonderful supporter of the CWB and all things education. We have Patricia Carr here from Miller Electric. She is part of the, let's see if I get this right, the education and workforce development team for Miller. I know that's only part of your very lengthy title, but Patricia, thank you for being on the show.
Fantastic. You did well, Max, so thank you. I'm a part of a unique set of people at Miller, where we lead all of the education and workforce development initiatives. I split the country with a wonderful colleague of mine, Steve Hidden, and you know, I'm all things Canada, as you know, and I cover all the Northeast, Southeast, Mid-South as well. So that's pretty much it.
So that's a big portfolio. So we're going to get to how you got to be in charge of a lot of stuff. And you know, I've known you for about 3 years now, and I've even seen that portfolio grow in these last 3 years quite significantly, you know, like, and so you must be doing something right.
That's great to hear. Thank you.
Well, and you haven't gotten fired. Both of us haven't gotten fired yet, so we're doing okay.
Doing all right, yeah.
So let's start at the start here, Patricia. You know, where are you from? Where's your roots from?
So I am first born generation here in this country. Both my parents are from the beautiful island of Jamaica, West Indies.
So Jamaica. And yes. You were born where in the U.S.?
I was born in Brooklyn, raised in Queens, and now live in Long Island. So I'm very New York, okay?
Very New York, but you were complaining about the cold. So I don't know, do New York people complain about the cold?
Yeah, they do. You know, cold is something, Max, you can never get used to. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no, I don't care who you are. The cold definitely affects our mood, right? So that's kind of one of the things with me. I don't like the cold.
I find it interesting because I really do think it's genetic. I do think it's genetic, right? Because like if you look at people that come from like European or Scandinavian countries or like Russia or Northern, you know, Asian countries, they're fine with the cold. They're totally fine with it. Like my wife is half Métis, half Polish. She's out there in the snow playing like a happy camper all winter long. I'm from South America. I come from a warm country. I'm warm-blooded genetically. So for me, I have never been able to get used to the cold. I like hide in the winter like a hermit.
We say the same. We share the same interests, for sure.
All right, so Patricia, you're born in Brooklyn. You're raised in Queens, and you work in New York now. So this is your bubble, right?
Yeah.
And what did you do in school? Like in high school, what did Patricia think she was going to do when she grew up?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, so I always knew I had the love for business. I love to understand money and how it works, you know? So that's kind of something I've always had an interest in. I also love the theater, the arts. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be an actress when I was younger.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Believe it or not. And did you work towards it? Like, did you take acting classes and stuff?
So I did. I was a part of the New York Thespian Club. Mm-hmm. I've done a few plays, you know, here or there. It's something that I like. But then slowly, surely, the love of the business world really kind of took over, you know? Mm-hmm. And God has a way of just working things out. You know, we have an idea, but he has a plan that's probably better than your own. So that's kind of how I ended up here.
So you're in high school, you're a part of the school plays, you're doing, I mean, you're into business, so that, you know, you like math, you like numbers. You graduate high school and there's that question everybody asks you, what are you going to do with your life? And what did you decide to do?
So I really didn't know. I joined a community college right here in Manhattan. Okay, so shout out to BMCC if anyone's watching. I'm a graduate of BMCC. Went there and I said, you know what? One thing I've learned, a lot of people suffer with school are debts. And I said, let me just get the GREs out of the way. Let's not pick a major. Let's just go into community college, get all the basic, you know, the math, the science, social studies that you need for any degree and get that done. So that's what I did. I started at a two-year school. I was working while I was in school as well, actually part-time at the New York City 311 system, which is like the information system for New York City. I was a call center rep.
Awesome. Hello and welcome to 311. How can I assist you?
Exactly. And I learned a lot about the city, which was pretty cool because I still answer questions today for my friends who have questions about the
Did you know that the underground transit is 3,600 feet long? No, I don't know. Stuff like that, really?
Yeah, I do. Like how to make complaints if your garbage is a bit. I know some unique things on how the city works. But nevertheless, you know, working there while in community college, graduated from there, obviously. And then when I got to the senior level, I went to Queens College, which is the CUNY system. I'm a graduate from CUNY. I realized that, hey, I do like business and I love sociology. I love the idea of society. So I had both. I did a double major there and a concentration in child psychology as well. So you
kind of took both branches at once. Like, I mean, most people tend to like go either science or art, you know, like or the liberal arts, you know, so like the human justice or human rights stuff. And you kind of did both. You're like, okay, I love business, but I also understand that there's a connection to real life, which is the sociology side of it.
Yeah,
which I find commendable because often, and like in the welding world, it's kind of like the difference between a welder and an engineer. The welder's on the ground. He's part of the real life. He's doing the real stuff. The engineer lives in like the theoretical bubble of life, which business can often be too theoretical. Yes. And they forget that context of what decisions get made in that office affect real people's lives over there. Right.
I'm with you. And that was the mindset, Max. Understanding people and how money works is to me the foundation to any career. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the reason why I went that route. And I'm so glad I did. Looking back now, I kind of knew a thing or two. I got to pat myself on the back.
But you seem someone like, I mean, from day one that I met you, you seem someone that has like, you got your stuff together. Like you seem very put, like, I mean, for someone who like me is like, I'm like chaos in a box, right? Like I'm just rolling around just firing off like some maniac and things work out for me somehow. But like, I look at you and you're like, man, she doesn't do that. She knows what her next step is, right?
You know, but I have to tell you, I can't take all the credit. It's the grace of God. I'm a product of the grace of God and just having that solid relationship. He leads me. And I'm proud to say that to you, Max. Yeah. That's why I am where I am today and will continue to grow by God's grace.
So you finish college and now it's like, you know, the big fear after college, you got to get a job.
Oh.
Right. Yes. And plus there's a lot of thoughts like, do I move? Do I stay?
Yeah.
Those are those college questions, you know, like it depends if do you have a spouse? Is there something keeping you home? Family, maybe, or is it time to like go across country and figure it out? What was kind of your thought coming out of school?
Let's get a job.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Start making some money.
Start making some money, you know. And I thank God, I have to say, gave me wisdom. I graduated with no debt from school. So I didn't have that kind of,
stress.
You know, that stress. So, but I wanted to kind of get started on my career young, just so I can continue to grow. And I did. So falling in love with the city, working at 311, my first gig was in the Workforce One-stop centers. I was like a re-engagement specialist. So I was once again kind of like a call center rep gig, calling people who we've placed through the system and confirming their employment with that company. So that's kind of my start in my career world.
Like the parole officer for work.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's how the city got paid. So, you know, you got to prove that they're working.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting gig. You know, I learned a lot about the city on that and the workforce development side. And that's where I fell in love with workforce development. It was there. You know, I continued to work myself up within that company before I left. But
Well, interesting because workforce development is a different thing depending on the level you're at, right?
Yeah,
so like when you're working with people who are, you know, disenfranchised or from a minority group or newcomers, there's a whole different set of obstacles as opposed to someone who is perhaps retraining or switching careers or looking to upskill within a career. Different challenges, different world, but I think you kind of have to know the bottom levels to really get the top levels, right?
Absolutely. That grassroots training, there's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like it. So I'm grateful for the experience because I understood to the two dynamics, right? That graduate coming out of school, trying to get a job. And like you said, that adult who was either changing careers, maybe even new into the country, mm-hmm. who needs to identify how to use their skill set from back home, per se, and apply it here in America.
Yeah.
You know, I also worked a lot with our veteran population, a lot of them who were, you know, coming back home and trying to transition to civilian life. You know, I had a contract, a veteran's contract that I worked on to do job placement for those folks. And that was something very interesting for me to experience,
yeah,
you
tough.
Know, and their spouses, I'm telling you. But one of those humbling things, and I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I learned a lot. So to your point, yeah, workforce development is a lot of range there, a lot.
So how long did you do that job for?
So I was a re-engagement specialist, I want to say, for about maybe a year and a half. Then I got promoted to career services. So now I became like a career advisor where I would kind of have my own setup. I had a set of clients that will come in through the system who are unemployed, and I will have to then identify their skill set, package them in a way to make them employable, mm-hmm. and send them out on interviews. So
did that include like figure out what skills they're lacking, what they need to like,
yes.
what gaps, like a gap assessment of their skill set?
Absolutely. So doing that skills assessment, identifying the areas that they need to add to the resume so they become more attractive to employers, and also taking a look at the local economic needs of that community, right? Because not every borough, take the five boroughs of New York City, Brooklyn, Bronx, Staten Island, Manhattan, right? And Queens. I miss Queens. I grew up there. So,
I just think of the Beastie Boys when you say five boroughs. I'm like, yeah, Beastie Boys. Yeah.
So what's interesting enough, and you see it there in Canada, mm-hmm. every borough, or in your case, province, has like a trend that you see in terms of work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that I got to be exposed to in that role, was to understand the local trends of the economy and making sure that those people who are unemployed have the skills they need to meet the demand of that local economy. Yeah.
And what type of work was it mainly that, like, what are the trends in the New York area
right.
that people need to like might mainly get hired in, or that you're trying to get people into these jobs?
Yeah. So I had a specialty. I focused on the industrial and transportation trade. So I was always into the trades, which is interesting. And so one of the trending things, I'll tell you a quick story. I had to recruit for Learjet pilots one time. So these are specific
mm-hmm.
niche type of pilot. They had to have over 3,500 flight hours for this. And they were flying these kind of more like private type style, you know, planes that were owned by businesses that would use some of the local regional airports in New York. And it was a specific skill set. I remember, you know, I was looking for these pilots. And what was most humbling thing for me was to see how many commercial pilots wanted to get out of flying for like the Deltas, the American Airlines, and wanted to transition. They may have like 30, 20 years of experience, but they did not have what it needed for that particular role because they never flew that type of plane.
Right.
So to your point, it's very unique in those areas. And in terms of what's trending in New York, a lot of it is construction. As you know, I mean, mm-hmm. we're building a lot here. We never had enough tool and die workers. That was at the bane of my existence in that role.
Well, that course doesn't almost even exist in North America anymore. So how can you want something that there's no school for, you know?
There's no school. And that you hit the nail on the head. That's the challenge. We're not training. There's not enough programs available. And there are available. They're not local enough to find the local people to take those programs. It requires them to fly out, get the training, and come back in.
Who's paying for that? Yeah, who's doing that? Yeah.
it's definitely tough, but that was some of the little things that humbling, but I learned a lot about New York's economy through that role.
Yeah.
Sure.
So then you were up into supervisor. How long were you there in that role for?
So I left from a career advisor, then I became a partner manager. So that role, I was managing all of the CBO's networks within a specific borough. and making sure that their cohorts are sending us their people, you know, because we're in a business of bodies, you know, when it comes to workforce development, training, you need enough people to train them in a specific skill. So that was my role. That's where I learned my reach and my knack for gathering people.
Pulling them in.
Pulling them in and also understanding the needs assessment and the collaboration piece and what it takes two independent organizations to work together for a common goal. And that, you know, I learned that skill there. And I have to tell you, very rewarding. And also learned a lot about how money was funded, because those CBOs are funded uniquely. And I learned a lot about, you know, those trends that I see in New York as well. So that's
well, collaborations make the world go by. Like, I mean, and I think that's something that got forgotten for like the last 20, I would say the 90s and 2000s, everyone forgot to collaborate. It was like everyone was looking at the Amazons and the PayPals and the Fords and Chevs and thinking one company to rule them all or one company to do it all. And then it all fell apart. Like it all fell apart. Like the economies collapsed in 2008 and again in 2015. And it's like, okay, well, what are we learning from this? We do need small business. We do need entrepreneurs. We do need young people getting into these trades that we forgot about for 20 years. So how the heck are we going to start getting bodies in them? The programs have been shut down. The schools have been closed. The funding is now gone. Well, what the heck, you know, how do we start dealing with that? And collaboration is the answer. Like we got to band back up. It takes a village, right?
It takes a village and industry. I believe needs to be the leader in that, because if we want education to lead, we're always going to be behind. Mm-hmm. Industry should be leading education. It shouldn't be the opposite. And that's kind of what we've been seeing. You know, the standards are created and then industry is hoping that the standards meet their needs. And I saw that in that job for sure. You know,
so after being partner manager there and taking on this big, you know, role, now you're in the money side. Right now, you're on the money side. Less about bodies, but more about KPIs and statistics.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
How long were you there for?
So I did that role. That's for another 2 years. And then I moved up to a senior sourcing manager.
This is all within the same company.
It's all within the same company. So before I get into Department of Education, I leave there and go there after that. But yeah, I moved up to a senior sourcing manager. So now I have recruiters reporting to me and a few career advisors of a bigger team. There I learned more about KPIs, like you said, numbers and strategy. That's where I really got to kind of create and be in my bubble and look at the system holistically and build strategy around how do we grow the business, you know, and get more people in our center. So that was exciting.
And then
I branched over to the Department of Education.
So was this a willing move? Were you looking to bounce? Were you like, I need to try something else? Because it sounds like you've been at this place like 7-8 years now.
Yes.
And that's like right out of college. Like, I mean, I'm sure you're looking, well, I don't, some people are very happy in the same place for 20 years. I get like a 7-year itch at about 7 years with a company. I'm like, I mean, I might love my job. It's great. But I start looking over the fence and being like, what's going on over there? I guess I get the urge to learn something else, right?
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, that gave someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, Patricia, you know, I think you'd be great for this role. Said, you know what? I'll go ahead and interview. Let's see what happens, you know. And it happened. And they hired me as a CTE manager. I oversaw a whole district there. District 79, which is a citywide district specifically for marginalized populations. So we had the adult education, your Access VR, which is just students with disabilities, and also students who are coming in taking like the GED or the TASS programs. They call them, you know, overage, undercredited students. Okay. I also dealt with students who are juvenile delinquents. I covered those programs as well citywide. So it gave me an opportunity just to reach different populations outside of just dealing with adults on the other end, you know, in workforce development. So that's kind of why I took it on. I was excited for the new challenge and also to bring more industry into education. You know, I have a love for industry and education working together. And that role for me allowed me to do that. So, and I stayed there for a while. Go ahead.
So how did that allow you to do that? You know, when people think of government or municipal, you know, roles and programs, you don't necessarily see that industry partnership very often. So, you know, how did you make that connection for, you know, the city of New York and industry to say, look, we need your guys' hands on hand here to
to get these programs up and running and to be successful?
Yeah. So a couple of things. I had to do some selling with some of the superintendents to get them to see the value, because we were dealing with non-traditional students.
Yeah.
These are students who are new to this country. These are students who there are other challenges, right, that take place. And the schooling is one thing, but they also need to work. You follow me? And if school could be kind of the medium that brings the two together, then that student will probably more than likely graduate, because now they can put food on the table. And that's what I saw, you know, and I thank God for my leaders at the time who bought into the idea, and they allowed me to build programs. So I got CVS to come in and build a pharmacy tech program in one of our classrooms in Brooklyn, and they trained students to become pharmacy techs.
And take them and told them,
That's it. And they trained them, they certified them, and they said, look, if you want to go back to school, we'll sponsor part of your tuition to become a pharmacist. So these are some of the programs that I was excited to be a part of. You really can see the change, you know, in the local economy. Yeah.
And how do you get the students to buy in? Because, you know, as in my life, you know, I've seen kind of all the sides of it, right from top to bottom. And there are people that have had struggles, regardless of what the reason is, people that have had struggles, especially with schools or school systems, create a deep level of distrust, right? They have a level of distrust of systems in general, of government, of programs. You know, like many of them feel like the system failed them when they were younger. And so now here shows up Patricia saying, well, this system is different. This one's not going to fail you. Why would they believe you?
Great question. The first thing is the barriers to getting things done. It has to be easy. So if you have, for example, if you have three meetings before that student can see the end goal, then that's an issue, right? So simplicity is the first thing. Another reason why I believe that program was successful is we brought the program to their local school. It was local enough where we removed travel issues, money to get there, you know. And also, we were paying students a stipend, because a lot of times these students drop out of school because they need to get money. Mommy doesn't make enough money on the table, or they have siblings that want to help out, you know, to help take care of them. And if you can, if education could provide a medium for both, then that student now is an environment to be more successful. So, but it can't be difficult for the student to even do business with us. You know, and that's why education, that's the missing gap. It's, we want to create systems that check boxes, but it doesn't necessarily serve the constituents a part of that system. Right. So that's where you see the system failing us. And that role allowed me to kind of remove some of that red tape and bureaucracy piece. It can be done, but it needs the right team and the right vision.
It does. It does. Because, you know, I love your checkbox analogy, because sometimes we see a checkbox on a list.
Yeah.
And for me, I can check that box. But for somebody else, they might have 5 or 6 hidden checkboxes under that checkbox that they need to hit before they can do that, that I just innately have through my existence or my privileges that I own, right?
Right.
Some people
right.
don't have those privileges. So that checkbox is actually a huge hurdle, right?
I'm telling you, I mean, I'll share this with you. So the ELS population, which is the English language learners population within schools, a challenge that we face with them is that they don't speak the native language.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a socioeconomic gap, right? So how do you serve that student where you're trying to teach them a language, get them the skills they need, and they need a job? So, it's taking that holistic approach to school. You got to look at the whole student. You can't just be focused on the academics. If you are, they're not going to be successful. That's where I saw that.
Yeah. All right.
But so it can be done.
Well, no, it's and we see it. We see that it gets done, and we see pieces of it. What I have yet to see is that it spread like the wildfire that we all wish it did.
Yes.
You know, because there's pockets of greatness all over the place. People doing amazing things. You have champions that come up within industry that come in and shake things up and do great things. But then it's almost feel like the bureaucracy comes in and says, that's enough of that. That's enough of that. Close the walls on you. That's a great idea and all. But we, you know, the old boys club, we like it the way we've always had it.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I've experienced that. Sure.
So you're working in this gig now, and it sounds like it's right up your alley and you're loving it. How long were you there for?
I was there for close to about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then Miller knocked on my door.
Okay, well, how does that happen?
Oh,
because Miller's a whole different type of company.
I'm telling you, and First of all, this is an act of God. Let me just put that out there because there's no way. Now, I get a message on LinkedIn. And this is when, like, LinkedIn, I don't know if you ever got, like, messages from recruiters. It can be sketchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get a lot of them. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you get a lot. So, you know. Okay. I get a message on LinkedIn from an HR manager over at Miller. And, you know, they found me on LinkedIn and I looked at my profile. They felt like I was a good skill set. They were looking for someone to lead that education, you know, the education piece of it in terms of strategy, who came from that industry. And I got the message and I'm like, is this real? I remember saying to my mom, Wisconsin. I hope they don't think I'm going to move because I'm not going to move to Wisconsin.
I mean, there's beautiful state parks in Wisconsin.
Oh, yes.
Somerset, Wisconsin is beautiful.
In the summer. Somerset. Listen, we talked about the cold.
That's right. That's right. You're not putting your snowshoes on? No.
Wisconsin's a different animal when it comes to weather. Mm-hmm, it could be sleet rain on a Monday and like 70 degrees on a Thursday. I've never experienced a place where two different ends of the spectrum. But in a nutshell, I get a knock on my door for education channel manager position. And I went up there, I interviewed, and here I am. And it's been 6 years since I've been there. And it's been great. I can't complain. The role, I'll tell you why it appealed to me. It brought the two greatest assets I believe I have, which is that I understand education, I understand how business works, and bringing the two together. Mm-hmm. And that is why, you know, I'm still here because it's been fun.
So when you got the knock on your door,
yeah,
you know, you got to play the pros and cons games, right? Like, you know, like, yeah. Okay, what do I gain? What do I lose? You know,
yes.
I feel like what you do now for Miller, and correct me if I'm wrong, but
yeah.
I feel like it pulls you a little bit away from the floor. Like you're a little bit off the grassroots now.
Yeah.
You're much more in the office. You're creating these programs. And there's a piece of it that you're not a welder. So it's not like you can get back on the ground and be like, hey, I'm going to show you how to do this because it's out of your wheelhouse.
Right.
So you gave up that level of comfort because in your government job, you knew all the pieces and you understood all the pieces very well.
Yes. Yeah, so definitely left the comfort zone for sure. And I love to see a project to the end. I love to see the ROI from a project. You have some people who love creating great programs and they walk away, they're fine. I like to hear, you know, what did this program yield us? And so, yeah, so some of that I did lose. But, you know, being on this side of the coin, I get to create those assets internally now. So looking at the business Miller as a whole and kind of how it works, you know, from a business standpoint, between our sales team and just continuing to grow the interest for us to focus on education. I have to say, Miller has taken some strides. Even recently now, we've created a whole new education vertical and strategy specific to that market. So it tells me that Miller has been listening in the last couple of years and we're making steps in that way. So I'm able to do some of that work, but not grassroots, like you say. It's more so dealing with the systems at play and how to make each system work, interconnect to make a trifecta that will yield us some fruit.
And I guess how Miller can be the product of choice, not just as a machine or a consumable, but also as an educational partner, right?
Absolutely, because that's what it's about. Now, if you want to do well in education, you got to build solid relationship and partnerships.
Yeah.
No one wants to, I mean, I've been in a bunch of sales calls. I mean, you're an instructor, right, Max?
I taught in the college for 8 years,
Okay, so you understand. You get the calls, right?
Yeah. Like hey, we got this new textbook. We got this stuff,
I'm telling you, especially when I was dealing with teachers and superintendents, they're always getting calls about LMS systems and why to go. You know, we all been there. And the approach with Miller now with taking a partnership-style approach to schools, I believe that's what's going to be beneficial for both entities. One, it gets our blue systems in the schools. But the second thing, like you said, we become the brand of choice, right, for that student. Because what you train on is what you're going to buy in your personal garage.
Absolutely.
You get older.
Absolutely. Brand loyalty is a very interesting thing. I mean, look at the automakers and how much they build their companies off that brand loyalty. And really, it translates. You know, there's companies in the world that are 300-400 years old and we don't even know, but we know the name, right? Like you hear Rolls Royce, none of us has sat in one. None of us has owned one.
We don't even get close to them. I don't think I've even smelled a Rolls Royce, but we know what it is immediately because of the brand name, right?
Because of the brand.
Yeah.
So that's the business we're in now.
So Miller, this is a great time to take our break. We've already flown through half an hour. I can't believe that. That is wild. Wow. I love every time we hang out. Every time we hang out, we're like this because we both have this energy. We're like, blah, 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 blah. So let's take a break. Our listeners can have a sip of coffee because I'm sure they've been hanging on our words. And we'll be right back after these words from our sponsor. So don't go anywhere here on the CWB Association.
The CWB Association is new and improved and focused on you. We offer a free membership with lots of benefits to anyone interested in joining an association that is passionate about welding. We are committed to educating, informing, and connecting our workforce. Gain access to your free digital publication of the Weld Magazine, free online training, conferences, and lots of giveaways. Reach out to your local CWB Association chapter today to connect with other welding professionals and share welding as a trade in your community. Build your career, stay informed, and support the Canadian welding industry. Join today and learn more at cwbassociation.org.
And we are back here on the CWB Association podcast. My name is Max Ceron. I'm here with Patricia Carr from Miller, who's talking to me about her. Well, we just ended up on her pathway to get into Miller. And now here we are today. She's been at Miller for 6 years and now is in charge of education and workforce development. Now, one of the points you just made right before the break was how Miller in the last couple years has seemed to really kind of get behind the education game. Now, I literally just interviewed someone from Miller for the podcast 2 days ago. One of the district managers up here in Canada, Tabor Hole out in the West. Great guy.
Awesome.
But we brought up education. And I said, well, you know, it's funny. In a couple of days, I'm interviewing Patricia. So, but the conversation was about how Miller sort of wasn't in the education spectrum. You know, Lincoln had done a hard push into education 20 years ago where they came out with like major educational discounts. They have their consumables program. They've tried a few variations of an LMS online education program. Mm-hmm. And during this whole development, this is when I was a worker and then a manager and then an owner and then into the college system as an instructor, Miller was always just like machines and consumables. And if I remember, there used to be a 1-800 number you could call and they would send you a tube of posters. And it was always nice to get the tube of posters for free because they were good posters. And it's nice. We all love having those posters around the shop just for safety and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, when I was about 2/3 of my way through college, teaching college, so I was in my third or fourth year, all of a sudden we had our Miller rep come by, Duncan at the time. And he said, we're getting into the education game. We're going to start creating manuals. We're going to start creating books. At this time, there was no talk of LMS or digital or nothing. It was just, you know, like a book system. Right. Are you interested in taking a look at them? Like you said, they're coming around knocking. And I was like, I'll always look at curriculum. Like, I mean, a good teacher doesn't say no to looking at curriculum because you want to incorporate all the best stuff.
Absolutely.
In your 6 years now, what's the difference? Why? Is it because they hired Patricia? You know, did Patricia come in and say, look, you hired me to be your education specialist. Well, this is what we got to do. Or was there a big plan already when you came in that it was like, we got to shift focus? Or I'm very interested to know the pathway for that journey.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to say it starts with products. So to your point, building big blue machines, you know, we built a augmented reality welder.
Right. We have a few at CWB.
Exactly. Yeah. So and when they built that machine, immediately they knew it was a training tool. And where does training happen? In schools. So I believe that's kind of the birthing of how Miller started to look at education. Like, hey, this, we may need to pay a little more attention here, you know? And so it started with that product. And as that product continued to grow, I mean, when I first started, I was hired specifically under that business with that product. We took that business from $3 million to $7 million in 5 years. Okay, so when we saw the growth rate and it was in schools, I mean, we do have some industry that buy this for their recruitment purposes and things like that, but the 80 of where that equipment is sold is traditionally in schools and union hall training centers and things like that.
Yeah.
So when we saw the opportunity as, you know, we're in schools, we're having these conversations, we're hearing about new welding programs being built or funding coming through, we say, aha, maybe we should not only be focusing on these two products. Let's look at the entire portfolio and have a strategy for all of it into education. So that's kind of where Miller first had the aha moment with education. We started with those augmented reality products, honestly. And they shed the light on for Miller to kind of start taking it seriously.
And that's really interesting because I feel like Miller got into that game basically to keep up with the Joneses, you know, because it's like everyone else is coming up with these cool tools. We can do that. Right. We can do that. We can make it better, you know, and like everyone was doing VR. Then they came out with the AR, right? So it was like, you know, we're going to one up our competitors, which is good. Competition breeds excellence, right? It is what it is. Yeah. But I didn't realize that that was kind of like the chicken before the egg. Because I thought there was already like a game plan for education before the AR machine came out. Because I saw those AR machines when they first came out, and I was like, these are awesome. And I didn't realize that that was the kind of like the inception of this education portfolio.
It really was. Because also, when Miller thought about education, he thought about educating our distributor channel, not necessarily education, the sector.
Yeah.
You follow what I'm saying? So a lot of even the books, the Miller Master's program, that was centered around educating our distributor channel. So that way they can go out and sell more of our stuff. You know, but yeah, you're right. The AR machines kind of started that baby here at Miller for sure.
So now what is the vision? You know, like when you're looking at education as a sector, well, that's a Pandora's box because you got government involved, federal, state, municipal, you got multiple levels, right?
Yep.
You got different, well, school districts with different, you got private, you got public, you got Catholic, you got... I mean, this is a web of webs, right?
Yeah.
How do you come into there and start scratching the surface of this of this web and saying, hey, we're a new player on the market. You already know us from our machines, but now we have this.
Right. So great question, Max. You know, 80-20 is a principle that we strive on here at ITW. And so when we look at the education sector, one of the things we did was look at where are we doing well? First, you know, what equipment are we selling into education? And, you know, like the XMT350 is kind of one of our leading.
Yeah. Very, you know, very multi-platform, easy to use machine.
Yeah. Easy to use machines and some of the Millermatics as well. So taking a look at kind of where the money's going. Okay. That's the first thing. And the next piece of it is what parts of the country do we see the sales happening? Right. And then once we identify those targets, then we can get to the point where we start to find funding trends, understanding where the funding's coming from. Like Perkins, I mean, some of this stuff is public knowledge. I mean, if you go on, you know, perkins.edu and look at the funding, you can see certain states are funded more than others and just building a strategy around that. Now, one of the challenges around doing that, though, you know this, Max, all of the information is not on the internet. So you're going to have to rely on a combination of your local sales assets, which is like the district manager like you interviewed with a couple of days ago, and a combination of our local sales assets and also our historical data and making decisions from that. You know, another play I'll say that really helped craft how we scratch the surface here is Open Book. You know, we have our own LMS system. Yeah. And during COVID, we had like over 1,000% increase in registrations during COVID. And what that allowed us to do is to capture data, because what's actually more expensive in this world is the data we get on our customers.
That's
right.
That's right.
And so taking a look at who's registered with Open Book tells us these are where the welding programs are. And we need to have a strategy in these areas. So that's kind of how we formed, you know, the strategy and how to focus on those areas. In terms of that, I hope that helps answer.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And then when you look at the funding envelopes, like, I mean, Miller's a private company.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's X amount of funding that gets put into your department from the mothership, right? To make the wheels turn and seed money or whatever it is. But, you know, how dependent are you now in the education sphere in chasing down those funding sources as well, whether they be public funding or private?
all the time because wherever the money is, they'll spend. I mean, Listen, if you speak to any instructor now, they'll tell you they'd love to buy 10 Millers right now. Mm-hmm. It's not an issue. Mm-hmm. You don't have to sell product. It's how do we get the money in the hands of the customer so that they can buy it, right? So that's an area of growth for us, is understanding the funding streams and where the money's coming from and when it's coming. And we are, you know, we're doing research even now on doing that. Just studying like the RFPs that come out. We're doing some of that work, making sure we respond to them, because there are certain players that play better in that than others. You know, like I said, Miller has not looked at education. We haven't been in this business for a decade. I think we were in it by default because we have the brand, but not taking an intentional approach in this space.
Right.
You know.
And then what about so, you're an important person, I'm sure.
No, I'm sorry. This should have been on silent. I'm so sorry. Yes.
Now, what about, like, I want to put a theoretical question in front of you. Yeah. You have a school that says, you know, we want 10 machines. We'll use your licensed education program or whatever it is on open book.
Five.
We're in. Five. We're in. Patricia, we're in. But we don't have the money for these 10 machines. Do you work with the schools to help them access funding for, like, you know, because they have access to funding different than you have access to funding? Are you a participant in that proposal process, or do you say, like, you know, good luck? Because I mean, that's a whole nother level of work.
No, you're right, but I'll tell you something. I believe for us to be effective, we need to be able to provide technical assistance to schools looking to improve welding programs. Right. So it's to your point. And I answer this in two ways. So the first thing is, yes, we do point them in the right direction of where to get the money. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had a conversation yesterday with the high school about, you know, some grants that AWS is coming out with that's going to close like on the 15th of March. Like, I'm like, go and apply.
Yeah, hurry up.
Yeah, you know. And so, yes, so we do some of that work. Another piece I can't stress enough is the capacity of the school. You know this, Max. Not every school has a grant writer. So you're going to have to find that instructor that's zealous, willing to do the work,
the champion,
follow the money, the champion to finish that. So we do a little bit of that. And then we also provide data around the impact of our system, specifically the AR machines.
For the
a lot of times.
Yeah.
For the proposal. So we offer that type of assistance. We have a grant assistance tool that we built out for our schools where they can, it gives them basically the successful components of a grant. So they understand kind of this, these are the things that need to be written in your grant for it to be successful. We have a list of like resources where they can go and find money. So we did some work in that area to help remove the barriers to buy from us. Okay. And the last thing I'll say in closing is, with the new education focus, we've created some curating buying options now help remove some of those barriers.
So like
you mentioned.
This is the whole package.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So that's something that we've created now with the change and looking to, and that's not offered to everyone, obviously, and we do some discovery, you know, with that. But it's not for everyone. That's
well, hey, Patricia, I want to start a school in my house here. You know, can I get some funding for 10 machines, please?
Exactly. So there's some discovery, you know, that happens. But to your point, it's removing the barriers to purchase. Mm-hmm. That is where the strategy is wrapped about, you know, and positioning us to be the preferred brand in that. So, yeah.
So a couple of things that I've noticed during a conversation is that, you know, the machines now. Like how much of a sales training did you have to get in terms of the products at ITW?
Good question. So I went through a full rotational program where I welded, got on the machines, understand, you know, the different processes. I probably know enough to be dangerous. I'm not a welder.
Could you fix your husband's chair when he breaks the leg off?
I probably can, actually. I do a few things around. I mean, I can fix him too, but that's a separate conversation.
Well, how many kids you got? Four now?
Four.
Yeah.
We're under eight.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So you're a super mom. On today's International Women's Day. Congrats to you on being a wonderful, strong Black woman with four kids kicking.
Thank you. But yeah, so that's the name of the game there, Matt.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot. I went through a full rotational program. I went to some of our different training sites throughout the country, got to weld with some of the greatest and latest trainers that we have that facilitate trainings on even some of our webinar series that you see today. And it was good because you got to know enough about the product to have the conversations. Right, you know what I mean?
And or else there's too many hands off.
It's exactly. And it's easier for me to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in a room and feel like I'm becoming the wall because I don't know what to say.
That's or right.
It's a different language. Because welding has its own language. Every industry has its own language.
That's right.
And if you're going to be, if you're going to play a part in this, it's important to know the language of the land. And that's what I believe.
That's great advice. You know, that happens lots in various levels of industry, because the higher up you go, it's almost more removed from the yes. product you are. So once you get to like senior leadership or CEO or board of directors, they're very important decision makers, but sometimes they kind of don't know what the heck's going down on at the bottom, right?
Right. No, I mean, it's, you're absolutely right. It's a product. It happens even in government, right?
It happens everywhere, yeah.
We got a lot of people making decisions that don't know what's going on in the local economy.
Yeah.
You're right.
So in the education sphere, because you've been in this sphere now for, it sounds like almost 20 years, yeah. if I'm doing the math right, like 18 years, something like that?
About 15. 15? Dating me a little bit.
Okay, 15.
Actually, no, you're right. 16. No, you're just closer to 20. You're absolutely right. Well, I'm gonna go.
We all are, man. We all are. So you've been doing this for a while. You know, yeah. what, and I'm going to back out a level here, not necessarily okay. you with Miller, but you okay. as an education, you know, involved in the education field, what are some of the big obstacles that you've seen really arise over your term in this field? You know, what are the things that perhaps new educators coming in today, you know, listening to this podcast should be aware of, be like, hey, watch these trends or watch these things, you know, that's kind of a could be an issue or could be a positive maybe.
Yeah, I think as I take a step back and see some of the issues, or like you said, speaking to a new educator coming in, mm-hmm. I would say networking.
Yeah.
I'm going to say why. Networking specifically with industry in the area where your school is. I believe that's a missing piece, how to build those solid relationships, because you have to have a balance, right? Your state has set your standards on what you need to teach, but then industry has theirs. Mm-hmm. And if you're a true educator, and I am, and you are too, Max, you want your kids to graduate and get good jobs.
Yeah, like tomorrow.
And so if you're in that game, that long range plan, and you're committed to that, I would say building your network. So taking time to learn who the players are in your community and finding out where they gather, whether it's, you know, specific clubs or, and going back to your administrator and say, hey, I want to be a part of this club. Would you sponsor me going there maybe once one Wednesday in afternoon and to leave work early? Kind of start to engage and have those conversations. Don't leave everything to the administrator. I can't emphasize that enough.
You know, that's great
advice. That administrator is burnt out.
They are.
Take it from me. They're burnt out and they don't know everything. But if they see you're serious and your heart's in the right place and you're really looking to do what's right for those children, then I don't see why they wouldn't support it. I've done it with my educators.
Yeah, no, you know, I do it too with my staff. And I feel like it was something that was around. I remember my dad grew up in the trades and there was a lot of associations and he would go to their bowling nights and pool nights and he would drag us kids along. And I'd see my dad with his, you know, there are two companies that hate each other in the industrial world, but this is neutral ground. This is a place where people just get together to chat and talk about business. And it's that networking, you know, was very good for my dad. In the associations now, because now, you know, I run the association, you brought up AWS, a fantastic association in the U.S.
Right.
How important do you see associations in terms of being partners of education or of these processes?
I believe they should be the actual true facilitators and intermediaries between education and industry. Mm-hmm. That's where I see associations. That's the role there, right? It's a gathering place, like you said, for different entities with the similar interests to have these meeting of the minds and build programs and see change. I believe that's the role of an association, not to just collect members and membership fees.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, you know, like a KPI of a membership is membership. You know, like, I mean, that's number one on my list at work is like, where's the members? And it's like, well, you know, that is important. I absolutely, like, business is business. Things got to grow.
Right.
But it's not going to grow and stay if you don't have the backing of the process behind it. Because I can make numbers burst tomorrow if I dump 10 grand into Facebook and, hey, look, we got all these members. And then 6 months right. from now, they're all gone, right? It's like you want that staying power where they get something out of it. It's not just like yes. for nothing. They're getting something out of it. There's a value proposition for them that they're like, hey, yes. I'm going to be a part of this association because I'll connect to people. Like I'll run into a Patricia from Miller. Mm-hmm. I'll run into mm-hmm. a so-and-so from, you know, this company. And those connections will help me with my career, right?
You're absolutely right. It's so important. You know, I would even take it a step further where or associations like yours or like AWS, they need to think about sustainability. Mm-hmm. I think that's also a missing piece, even in strategy business-wise, mm-hmm. right? When I'm thinking about programs, how can we sustain this thing 5 years down the road when I may have moved on or yeah. when you move on, Max?
Yeah.
And a lot of times what happens, especially in the education industry, something will be created and it dies with the person.
Yeah.
You know?
I seen a report that said, and this was in Canadian government, but I'm sure it's the same around the world,
yeah.
that there's more money looking to be invested in pilot projects than sustainable projects. And I looked at that and I thought, you know, that's a double-edged sword if I ever read one. Because yes, we want pilots. Yes, we want people to come in with new ideas and to say, this is a new thing I want to do because of X. But if you're not willing to fund that after year three, because now it's a sustained project, then did you really care? Did you actually care? Or did you just need to hit up a KPI on your box to make your boss happy? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. So that even happens within internally in organizations as well, mm-hmm. you know, all the time. So that's sustainable. To me, we should be leading with sustainability.
That's right.
In my opinion, we should be leading with that. And that shouldn't be an afterthought. Now I have a great, sexy program. Now, how are we going to maintain it? No, let's build a program that can be maintained with the current systems in place. Whoa.
Yeah.
What's the process? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with you 100%.
Now, what about your art bug inside of you? What happened to the Ooh. Art bug? So tell me what's going on with you now. Because I know art. I got my guitars back there. Art never runs. Okay. It never runs away from you. Even if you take a break for a while, it sneaks back. So, tell me. Yeah. And I'm just going out on a limb here, thinking that you're doing something.
Well, let me say this: I'm not doing anything actively because mm-hmm. I have four children and a husband, which my life is filled.
You have enough rules. You got to play.
So I may be acting in that form,
yeah.
you know, depending on if I'm a counselor or a teacher or a warden for the day. No,
yeah.
I'm kidding. But however, you know, I do find time by God's grace to really indulge in the art. So like, I love music. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm someone that I'm moved by music. I love just even instrumentals. I love jazz, mm-hmm. you know, and my daughter, interestingly, my youngest daughter, anyway, Elizabeth, she loves to sing, so she got a little bit of that
wonderful.
From, yeah, I mean, she always has a song in her heart, Max.
Yeah, my daughter is a professional musician, you know.
Is she?
Yeah, she started as a musician young. She had the skill by five.
Wow.
She was already amazing. And so I really supported her. And then, you know, everyone's always like, oh, arts are kind of iffy. Not to me. Arts are, I think, almost like the highest level of human expression. You know what I mean? And and now she's a musical director for a school district. So,
Get out of here.
So when people are like, oh, there's no future in art, I'm like, yeah, there is. My daughter's got a great job and she's a professional flute player. She kicks butt, man.
Awesome. It can be done. Mm-hmm. It can be done. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. That's awesome, Max. You're happy to hear that. And you send me some of her stuff.
I can. Yeah, she's online. Yeah. So here's another question, another angle. What about your role and I'll put two questions in one, as a female person of color in a non-traditional industry, right? That's the question. And that's a barrier. Like, I love seeing a successful, strong woman, especially a person of color, you know, being you. You're just being you and you're kicking butt. That is inspirational to so many people, whether you want it to be or not. It just is, right?
Yeah.
How do you feel about your path? Have you had some major roadblocks? Have you had some serious issues? And how did you navigate them?
So stereotypes exist.
That's right.
Right? And people had their mind made up by just looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, so yes, and it has impacted my career. I have experienced some things, you know, some barriers of growth because of what I look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not one of the boys or one of the, mm-hmm. you know, in the inner crew. I don't look like the socially acceptable one in this role.
Right.
And so one of the things that has helped me, obviously my relationship with God is number one, but the second piece is staying who you are. I'm very intentional with that. So integrity is everything to me, Max.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe integrity can get you far because I can sleep well at night with everything that I do at work. And also allowing your work to speak for itself. That's mm-hmm. another portion of it. And being open to feedback. I'll say that's the third thing. And even feedback from those that you know are not your greatest fan.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you can actually, you open up the door to teach them something different than what they thought was.
No, and that's wonderful. No, that's wonderful.
Okay.
Because,
you get that. Okay.
Because mm-hmm. I feel that. I feel that. I'm a kind of a firecracker, and you've met me. I'm kind of and I got long hair, and I'm covered in tattoos, and I come from a very different background that a lot of people would normally run into in this level of business, right?
Right.
And I've had to have that conversation. I've had to be open and honest with people to say, like, you know, just look at the work. Don't look at me. Just look at the work. Because that's what I'm here to do and work. And when I go home and I'm in my personal life, I'll live my personal life how I want. But when I'm here, I'm doing the job. Tell me the job is good. Criticize the job, whatever you want. But that's fair. But don't come at me and say, I think you should change the way you look, talk, act. You know, I've had in business many times people say, well, could you tone down the way you communicate with people? And it's like, not really. That's kind of who I am. Like and part of the reason you hired me in the first place is because you want me to go out and do this for you. And then you can't complain when I'm doing it here too.
Right. It's the same Max at the boardroom, it's the same Max at home.
That's right. That's right. Because being authentic has gotten me a long way. Because there was a small small portion of my life where I was younger and I was trying to figure out how to like change myself to fit in, and it was mm-hmm. probably the most unhappy I'd ever been in my life when I was like, you know what, I remember I had gotten a couple tattoos when I was really young, and mm-hmm. people were like, oh, they're gonna ruin your career, blah 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 blah. And then I probably had to fight six times harder than the average person, mm-hmm. but I started climbing that ladder, you know, just fight, and eventually I got to the point where you're like, you know what, I'm just gonna get as many tattoos as I want, because you know what, I don't care anymore. I just don't care. If you don't pay me for my skill set and my passion and my intelligence, and you're not willing to pay me because of ink on my arm, then we don't have a relationship. This isn't going to work.
That's
anyways.
Yeah. And you shouldn't want to work for that employer.
That's right.
That's just the truth, because you should be interviewing the employer as much as they're interviewing you.
That's right.
And you know, I'll say this, the reason why it's like that is because there's a lot of people who got where they are by what they look like and not mm-hmm. necessarily the work they've done.
That's right.
And
I love that that is a beautiful way to put that.
You know, so that's why we stand and we interact and face the things we face looking the way we do. Because a lot of people who are making decisions today are there because of what they look like.
Yeah.
Nothing more, nothing less.
That's right. So. And then we talked about that old boys club, or you know, like,
oh yeah,
that and it's tough to crack, and they make it's part of the struggle, but we got each other's back, you know, it is what it is.
I'll give you a quick story back just to make you laugh. I remember I was talking with a director for a school, and I won't say the person's name,
yeah,
and scheduled a meeting, and we met in person, and he was shocked that I was black. I didn't expect to. He was honest about it.
Yeah.
We had a chuckle about it. But I go back to say the assumptions, right?
Right.
The assumption that people make. And so the more we continue to be us, Max, we get to prove the assumptions to be wrong. And that's a beautiful thing.
It is. It is. And it's very validating. Thing. You know, I have that. The question I get lots is, can I talk to your director? You're looking at him, bro.
Oh, you can't make it up.
No, you can't. But you know what? It's why I do the podcast. It's why we do these things. It's, you know, awesome. To get the stories out there and to let people yeah. know that no one's alone. No one's unique.
Yes.
You know, everyone's got their own piece of the puzzle, but we all fit. There's a fit for everybody, right? And it's, okay. And it's somewhere in this thread of fabric that we call life, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Now, what's on the path for you for the future? You know, like you've been, and we can break this into two pieces. Let's break it into first, the first part, which is Miller. You know, what's Miller got coming up in the future? What are you working on? What new and exciting things can we perhaps get a teaser of coming down the pathway here?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing I'll say is this education vertical. You know, it's actually a dotted line in corporate now, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the immediate thing. And in the next couple of years, I'm excited to get into the weeds a little bit about our strategy and our long range planning and, you know, Miller being more intentional in this space from a dollars perspective and also from a, you know, equipment perspective, because we're doing a lot of VOC work consistently and hearing, you know, what's good about our machines, what sucks about our machines, what do schools need, and taking the charge on those conversations to really influence, you know, our new product development. Those are some of the areas you're going to see some great things from us in that space, is being more intentional to build machines that work for schools. I'm excited about that.
That's such an interesting idea, because it was something I talked about when I was just interviewing one of the major cobot distributors in Canada, when I said nothing's real. Like, things don't hit society for real till they're a toy. You know what I mean? Because you think about it, you know, like, your first interaction with vehicles is with toy cars. Your first interaction with clothing and fashion is with toy, you know, figurines and dolls. And right, because nothing really, and like, there's little construction sets. So if you're in a construction family, you can buy your kid a little toy drill. And that's like, hey, STEM, we're talking STEM. We're putting these toys in front of them. Well, where's the toy robots? Where's the toy cobots? Where's the toy welding machines? Where are the toy cartoons? Where are the cartoons for this? Because if you're not putting this stuff into the mainstream and try to get it in their heads at 15, you're too late. You're way too late. Because they've already, I mean, they're playing with fire trucks, cop cars, ambulances, because they're playing doctor, they're playing lawyer. They're playing with all these things from zero. So there's already these conceptions, these pathways being made in their synapses and their brains that are kind of focusing their future. And I said, you know, cobots, because right now cobots are such an amazing thing in industry, but they're not really catching on to small industry. They're kind of, there seems to be a barrier there. Right now, everyone across the planet is frantically trying to figure out how do we get cobots, because they've come down in price significantly. But money isn't everything. Just because they're cheaper doesn't mean people are buying them. So now the question's like, well, why not? It's like, well, there's a comfort level that's not there. Well, can I buy a cobot at Home Depot? Well, no. Right. But I can buy a 3D printer at Home Depot. So, right, I got additive manufacturing at Home Depot. That now makes sense. It's now a hobbyist. I can do that.
Yes. Right?
So I think that, you know, when you're talking about getting welding and working with the sales side, distribution side, and education, then there might be some things that come out of those type of, you know, investigations to say, well, maybe there needs to be that, you know, that simple welder that you can put, and I don't even know what this is. I'm like in imagining something, but like the toy that kids can play with, that's like it. And I guess VR is like that. AR is like that, but they're pricey machines. They're pricey machines, right? They're not something you can just pick up on your phone. Like I put a proposal in a couple of years ago, like, let's make a welding video game for your phone, like an app that kids could play. And like, you could even have like it sponsored by industry being like, oh no, the bridge is going to collapse. Let's go fix it with the welder. Which electrode should I use? Should I use this one, this one, or this one? And you get to pick and you learn a little bit about electrodes.
Right.
You know, Miller could sponsor it and say, hey, use Hobart 7018 or whatever. You know, like, I don't know. Like, but I didn't get shot down in so many words, but I was told like, maybe not yet. Not yet. But what do you think about that angle about, you know, like trying to get, like, how do we get it into like more in mainstream, right?
I love that idea. You're not going to have more conversations about this. Because this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking like the market is to go after kind of like the mathematics, the publishers, right? Go after the textbooks companies and build activities around the welding space. That's what I would go after. You know?
Yeah.
So my little one, like you said, second grade, you know, can have a project centered around welding.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. But I like where you're going with this. It's a totally idea. You're onto something, Max. You may want to go patent it.
That's all right. I don't care. I'm open source. Take what you want. I'm a not for profit. Remember, like, it's all yours. Take it and run with it. Just put my name somewhere on it so that I get some credit.
That's it. And come back and write a check. No, I'm teasing.
Nah, I don't know. Money is a concept. I know you. I agree.
It's a concept. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's not definitely not everything. It doesn't run my world. That's for sure.
All right. And to wrap up the interview, you know, the first question was what's going on in Miller and the future that makes you excited. What's going on for Patricia that's making you excited? What do you see in your future? Like, you've had a pretty consistent run here of up, up and up and up and up. Now, are we going to see Patricia breaking? Is Miller Education going to break off as its own department? Do you see like yourself as a VP, or do you see yourself getting enrolled into something else? Like, what's a dream state?
So we have broken off to our own department now. Mm-hmm. So that's a new thing. And you're right. I see myself leading that team.
Yeah.
100%. That whole department. And eventually working up to the C-suite. You know, that's my goal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if God has it, now you're the boss. I'm just saying. Don't beat me up. Don't tease me. But, you know, I have high expectations with that. Because one of the things that, and what drives me is I would love to get there is one thing, but I want to give back. Just like yourself, Max. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a director. And you said you're intentional about raising up someone else. And I'm always looking for someone to backfill my role, because that's mm-hmm. how you grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to find that potential person that can take the reins from you.
A rising tide raises all ships.
That's it. And so not a lot of leaders think that way, though, Max. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're unique in that. But yeah, so to your point, I see myself running this department entirely. So,
yeah, no, that's awesome. That's awesome. Hopefully, I can work my way up into that C-suite here at CWB, and we can carry on these partnerships for the next 20 years.
I don't know
if I want to work 20 years. I'm older than you, so.
Yeah, but listen, if you're still kicking and got the fire, keep going because it's nice when you have something to do. Yeah. I've heard too many stories of people retiring and have nothing to do.
Oh, girl, I got so many hobbies that I could do.
You're busy.
And honestly, my hobbies would probably be volunteer work in the same industry I do right now. Oh, okay. Because I've always been a volunteer. I believe in volunteerism.
Yeah.
So that's always been a big part of my life. And I've always looked at the retired volunteers where they can really like get into it. And I'm like, that would be so cool to just get out there and give every day. But you got to be financially secure to do that. So I need a few years in the C-suite to get everything under wraps around here.
Right. To secure the link.
That's right. I mean, my kids are already grown up and moved out because I started real young. But you still got another 18 years ahead of you. So.
Oh, I sure do.
And four,
18 to life right now.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Well, let's not talk even about college. Hopefully, they all go into the trades.
And listen, I'm raising smart kids, so they'll get scholarships.
Hey, there you go.
Whatever they decide, they'll get scholarships.
Awesome, Patricia. Well, is there anybody you'd like to send out a shout out, or would you like to say hi to anybody before we sign off here?
Oh, yeah. So I'd love to say hello to the team at Miller and specifically the education group. Thank you, Jessica, if you're watching. Jessica's the reason why I'm at Miller. She found me on LinkedIn and I'm here. I'm a product of the vision that she had for this business. And, you know, I'm just grateful for the opportunity and just the openness. You know, I'm a little radical myself, Max, mm-hmm. like you. And I love the environment that Miller creates where you can be your true self. And they're also comfortable calling. You can call their baby ugly, like my boss, Phil, always says that to me. It's okay to call my baby ugly, you know, so I appreciate those things and that they happen there. And also just my colleague, Steve Hidden, you know, I've been working alongside Steve. You know, Steve.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 7 foot chemist. You know, working alongside Steve has been an absolute pleasure. He's been a great, you know, colleague to have. And just the team in general. I haven't met anybody at Miller that like that pissed me off.
Miller, you know, ITW, just hired one of my best friends, Stephanie Hoffman. She just started there, so I'm pumped.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I'm pumped. Yeah. I was trying to poach her, but you guys got her before me, you sneaky guys. But hey, man, talent's talent. I'm proud for her, so.
Yeah, I mean, I can say Miller Higher as well. I could say that.
Well, they got
Nederland's
you.
been there a long time. Thank you. Nederland's been there a long time. I'll tell you a crazy thing. When I was interviewing, the average person was there like 20 years. I'm like,
What?
people stay here this long? You know, I'm thinking about it. Because, you know, when you think about career, they say it's best better to move because you'll be able to kind of grow, you know, quicker. But when you think about, I'll take Jessica Marhefke, for example. I believe she's been here about 25 years now. And I mean, she's been from many different divisions within the company. And she's been here a long time and she's still happy. I mean, that
That
makes me
says a lot,
hope.
yeah.
It says a lot about the culture. So I'm grateful to be a part of a culture. And they believe families first. And I've proven that
Good.
with this company. Yeah.
Good,
So
good.
here's a commercial for Miller. Thank you. I'm working for Miller.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I really appreciated you being on the show. Are you going to be in Orlando for FabTech?
Yes. Will you be
Okay.
there?
I will be there.
All
I'll see you. We'll have the
right. All
podcast
right.
machine down there. I'll have my staff,
Oh,
Daniela will be down there with me. So we already got the hotels
nice.
booked and we're ready to rock.
Perfect.
Yeah, so I'll
Yep,
see
I'll
you
definitely
there
be
if I
there.
don't see you before,
Yes.
but I would love to bring you up for one of the CanWelds in Canada. We do a CanWeld in Canada every year,
Oh,
so kind of like our
yes.
Canadian one. So maybe next year we'll talk and, you know, we should probably get
Yes.
you up and do a session on Miller Education. That would be
That'd be
fantastic up in
perfect.
Canada. Oh,
Absolutely.
that's a great idea.
You can write that one down. I'm there.
Okay, yeah,
Okay.
it'll be in Calgary next year. I'll definitely put you on the list. I don't know why I didn't think about that till just now. Duh.
Nothing happens before it's time and things are moving, right,
Yeah,
Zach?
that's
It was
right.
like when we ran into each other at the, I think it was last year at the CWB conference. Is
Yes,
that the last time?
yeah.
Yeah. That was
That
the last
was
time I
just
saw you.
was that Chicago? Was that
Yeah,
Atlanta?
Chicago.
Chicago, right?
Chicago.
Yeah, that was
It
nice.
was terrible.
It was good.
It was good. It was terrible.
Yeah,
But
yeah,
yeah, other
yeah.
than that. Well, thanks again, Max. Thank you
Awesome.
for having me. Thank you for thinking of me. And thank you for all that you do. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And for all the listeners that have been following, downloading, and sharing the podcast, thank you so much for being a part of us and our team. Keep sending us suggestions. Keep commenting on the podcast. Keep sharing them. We take everything and we try to answer everyone. I don't think we miss anyone. And if we do, hit us up again. You can follow us on CWB Group Welding on any of the socials or myself, AskMax75 on Insta. So thank you, and I'll catch you at the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed the show.
You've been listening to the CWB Association Welding Podcast with Max Cerrone. If you enjoyed what you heard today, rate our podcast and visit us at cwbassociation.org to learn more. Feel free to contact us if you have any questions or suggestions on what you'd like to learn about in the future. Produced by the CWB Group and presented by Max Cerrone, this podcast serves to educate and connect the welding community. Please subscribe, and thank you for listening.